welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program today. We come your way every, it's every Sunday from 7 at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. And we also are on Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we also archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. We also link to our guests so that you can gather as much information as you possibly can in regards to what our guests have to offer. And we ask you to do that. We ask you to find out what it is that they're sharing with you, trying to impart to you and help to make your life a better life to live, a life of thriving, not just surviving. And with that having been said, we're going to be talking about the path to wealth. We're going to find out all about that, the seven spiritual steps for financial abundance. My guest is the author of this nice little book. I actually like this. This is it is not intimidating, which usually in many cases when you get advice, especially when it comes to wealth or prosperity or abundance or finance, it's a huge tome giving you all kinds of steps and rules and regulations and thus and such. Mae McCarthy is my guest, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today, Mae.
Oh, thank you so much, Richard. I'm happy to be here.
You are what is referred to as a serial entrepreneur, as well as what's a term, I guess it's fairly new, called an angel investor. And you're also going to talk with us about these seven different steps, and we're going to get into that shortly. I think that where we like to start is always with definitions, defining our terms from the perspective of our guest. I certainly can go to Webster's, and I can give people the definitions, but what do you mean by wealth in this context?
Well, the definition for wealth for me is being whole and complete, lacking nothing in every area of your life. So it certainly involves finances, but it's also relationships, health, using your skills and talents in fulfilling and satisfying ways, recreation, any area of your life that you consider a major area of your life. Being whole and complete, lacking nothing, being completely satisfied and fulfilled is my definition of wealth.
And I would venture that the majority of people that you come across aren't there yet.
And well, they might be there in one area, mm-hmm. which, instead of being really grateful and knowing that they can achieve that goal in that area, what they do is sometimes just take it for granted and disregard it. And what I sort of advocate is being grateful for everything that you have and also being grateful for what you want.
Well, I know that another aspect of all of this has to do with intuition. That is a huge part of it in the sense that, and we talk about that all the time on this program, intuition. And the role that it can play in our lives. But we really haven't been trained, in a manner of speaking. We really haven't been taught how to use our intuition to guide us through our lives. What are some of the initial, shall we say, steps that you take people through, or that you've taken yourself through, or that you have discovered, to not just listen, because I would say most of us have probably heard that still small voice. So we've had that gut feeling that, I really should turn left rather than right kind of thing. And that's all fine, well, and good. But as I remember writing in a personal growth program, I went through a weekend intensive. I said that I was going to not just listen to, but follow the promptings. That's not so easy.
Well, I think that people try to make it too complicated. To be honest with you, Richard, I'm as you said, a serial entrepreneur, and all that means is that I've started, grown, and sold six companies, my largest being over $100 million in annual revenues. So I'm quite familiar with being what I call a self-proclaimed efficiency expert. And I like to train salespeople, train customer service people, managers, executives, how to do their jobs well, achieve their goals, and do it in the least amount of time in the most effective way, not only for themselves, but for everyone that's concerned. So intuition, a lot of people try to make it really complicated. And when you hear that term, listen to that still, small voice. I mean, Oprah uses that term a lot. She says that she's listened to that still, small voice of intuition her whole life. And the only time she's made mistakes is when she hasn't listened. And what I try to tell people is that intuition is simply a thought, a gut instinct, an awareness, maybe even a message through another person or a sign. It's something that seems to show up without any warning that's trying to give you some information. And in my book, what I try to do is help people do a really simple daily goal attainment practice that enables their intuition and their subconscious to show up with messages in a more obvious way more often. And so intuition is something that we all have. It's nothing that you have to really listen for. You just have to be aware of how it can show up, and it can just show up as a thought that just flies into your head to call someone, to go somewhere, to do something. And because it's not so big and brilliant and obvious, oftentimes what we do is we reason through the message. We want to know what the outcome is for taking that step, and if we can't rationalize what the outcome will be, we just disregard it. So in my book, I ask people not to disregard it, but to actually take the step, do the left turns per se, follow that intuitive lead. Or if you don't feel comfortable, just ask for another lead. You can actually ask this all-knowing power that shows up as intuition for another lead. What you can't do is just do nothing.
I know that as I was growing up, and I remember sharing this experience before, where I used to bicycle everywhere. I lived in Phoenix, and I used to have to bicycle into work from where I was living. And that was about a 5-mile journey. But it was out at that time, it was out in the more rural farmland area of Phoenix to the west. And I remember one afternoon bicycling into work. And I was traveling down the main road that I usually take that beelines. I mean, it was a straight shot to the station. And we're talking about farm field length. We're not talking about city blocks here. So these are much larger blocks. And I passed this one street. I think it was like 51st or 67th Avenue, as numbers go. And I just had this feeling, okay, you need to turn right at the next turn. You need to turn right, turn right, turn right. And I went on by. I'm going, beeline shot. What's the big deal here? I went halfway between the two major streets along this farm field. I turned around. I went back and made what would have been the right turn, in this case a left turn, and went up a farm field block and then continued west in the direction I was going. And then I had to go back down. And I never understood exactly why. Was this a test to see if I would follow? Was I avoiding something? Was there something that along this path that I would come across that I needed to come across? I don't know. Nothing happened. You know, nothing. There was no major event or even a minor event. I just continued on, and I got to work, and you know, continued. And I think that's the other thing, too, is, as you say, we make it complicated and we analyze it. We try to figure out, okay, well, if I go this way, what's going to happen?
Right. And in your example, you might not know that maybe just exactly at the right time that you were traveling on that road, maybe another car was passing another car and would have hit you. You don't know.
Yeah.
You just follow the direction. And because your goal is to get to work safely, you were led by your intuition to do what was necessary in order to get there safely, in order to get there easily, or whatever your goal was for traveling to work that day. So that's the other thing. Intuition often, we recognize intuition sometimes when we do disregard it, we'll have something happen that is not so great, or we'll miss out on an opportunity, and then we'll remember that our gut or our heart or somebody had some advice for us that really resonated with us. Something happened that if we would have followed that intuitive lead or that intuitive message, we would have avoided that mistake or had that success. We've all had experiences like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that, just as you did, you know, you felt that really strong gut instinct that was almost talking to you. I mean, you knew what it was trying to tell you, which was to go that other route. And you followed it, and you did arrive safely to work. I can tell you countless times where people that have gone through my workshops or myself have gotten a thought that sort of flies into your head without warning that is a thought of someone maybe you haven't talked to in a while or someone close to you. When that happens, all you need to do is pick up the phone or stop by at their office or something, but get in contact with that person. One of my friends is in her mid-50s, and she didn't have a retirement plan, and she really wanted one. So she was following the steps that are in my book to write out how grateful she was to have a really solid retirement plan. Well, she got this thought of a woman she hadn't talked to in about 15 years. So she knew that meant she had to call her. So she called her and felt a little strange saying, you know, hi, sorry, we haven't talked in a while, and I just thought of you, so I know in this prosperity program that I'm using that means I need to talk to you. So they giggled and laughed about that and had a conversation and learned that my friend wanted to have a retirement plan. Well, this woman that she called had just put together a group of very, very wealthy, high finance women that meet on a regular basis and talk about finances and retirement plans and investing. And she was invited to join the group. In that group, she got tens of thousands of dollars worth of free advice and now has a really great retirement plan. But even more than that, she has new friends, new resources to be able to learn more and more about finances and managing her portfolio.
Well,
so just a thought can fly into your head.
Exactly. And you just don't know, you know, what it's going to be or how it's going to manifest and so forth. And the people that are going to be drawn into your life or that you will draw into your life, as the law of attraction tends to share with us, that, you know, you will draw into your life those people and or experiences that you've kind of asked for. Which is another aspect of why it's so important to be very careful what you ask for as well. And also, as I've talked with many people, how you phrase what you ask for. That's extremely important, too. The words have power, don't they?
They really do. I will stand on any soapbox everywhere and remind people how powerful they are. Because the words that you speak, think about, and feel are really going to attract into your life exactly the same. We had at the beginning of the year, I have tons of friends and different business colleagues who go through the process of creating new goals for the new year or resolutions. And just about 100% of them always have something to say about health or their weight. And the common phrase that I hear is, I want to lose 10 pounds. Well, if you think about that goal, I want to lose 10 pounds, what you're telling your subconscious is that the goal is to be wanting to lose.
Mm.
Well, if you're always achieving the goal of wanting to lose, you never actually get to the final outcome, which is to be 10 pounds less, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I ask people to do is describe your goal as though it's already completed with gratitude. And so a goal like losing 10 pounds could become, I'm so grateful that I'm physically fit and trim, toned, energetic, and a healthy, pain-free body that's easily able to go on walks and hikes with my family and friends, and we have a great time.
Hmm.
See the difference?
Yeah. I've also heard the same phrase. It is said that, yes, wanting to lose, but that if you are wanting to lose X number of pounds, you need to change the word from the word lose, because what invariably happens when you lose something, you find it again. And you don't want to do that. You want to get rid of. I myself, and I've never had a weight problem, even in my own mind, in spite of the fact that at one point I was, I mean, I'm 5'11", and at one point in my life I was 200 pounds. Now, that wasn't really a big deal from a medical standpoint, in spite of some of the other issues that I face as well. My wife says, it's not a big, it's no problem. You know, you look fine, you're doing well, you know, and so on and so forth. But that number did not feel comfortable. Not so much the weight, but the number. I didn't like it. You know, it's as if I had changed my name to something I didn't like, it would be the same thing.
Wow.
And I don't want to be there. And of course, when I first, met my second wife, I was 175. But I was also bicycling all over town at that time. And so I was fairly toned and burning off excess this and that and the other. And then I learned how to drive. So I wasn't bicycling as much. And so that's when gradually the weight started to come on. I was still fairly active, but still. So I think that's one of the things, too, that you're also saying is, isn't there a certain point along the way? Yes, you know, stating what you've how you phrased it is, let's in terms of, you know, getting to the our ideal weight, not what the medical community thinks is our ideal weight, but our comfort with that weight, in terms of the way that we phrase this for the affirmation, if you will, right?
Right. So the process itself, what I ask people to do is set aside, you know, 25 to 30 minutes every single morning. And, you know, most business leaders will tell you that when we revisit our goals on a regular basis, we have a much better opportunity to see possibilities for achieving it all day long. I mean, our subconscious and intuition are going to really go on high alert if we describe the goal as already completed. So the first thing you do is write down what you're grateful for and what you want as though you already have it with gratitude. So that if I were to read your letter of what you're grateful for that you have and what you want as though you already have it, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference. I would see that you have all these things. And this would be in all major areas of your life. And so you write that down, and then you read it out loud. And what happens when you read it out loud is it anchors it more fully within you. And when you anchor something, any school teacher will tell you that you're able to recall things that you've read out loud. And as you add that element of emotion, you're essentially telling your brain that you're incredibly serious about achieving these goals. And the brain has a technique sometimes to help you avoid disappointment. So if you've had a big goal in the past that you haven't achieved, your brain remembers what that disappointment felt like. So it's actually going to try and work against you a little bit at the beginning and not show you intuitive messages and subconscious leads to direct you towards possibilities because it's trying to protect you. But when you read it out loud with emotion every single day, your brain is getting told, look, I'm serious about this. You don't need to protect me. I really want to achieve this. This is my good. And then you'd use a technique for about 5 minutes, which is seeing yourself in your realized goal. This is a technique that Olympic athletes, professional athletes, musicians, and even business people like me, we use often, which is to see ourselves in the completed goal, being in that healthy body, being in that successful sales meeting where you get a contract, being in a meeting with your leadership team, and looking at financial revenue spreadsheets and reports that show that you've reached your goals, being at that dinner table with your family, having a harmonious time. Whatever your goal is, see yourself in the completed goal. And what that will do is also help you the next morning to describe it with greater detail. You know, what you're experiencing, who you're with, how you're feeling, what the financial revenues are, what the health achieved health goal feels and looks like, what you're experiencing. And as you do that, your intuition and your subconscious are going to go on high alert because it wants you to operate in integrity. And if you're describing a goal and being grateful for something that you don't have quite yet, but you're describing it as though you do, It wants to help you realize that goal, so it starts to illuminate in the midst of billions of pieces of data that are being sent your way every single day. It starts to illuminate possibilities to make those goals true. Let me ask you a question. Do you remember the last time you bought a car?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, most people will go through a process where they look at different models, they consider different options, and they eventually get it narrowed down to one or two models. Maybe they've even test-driven them and those sorts of things. Well, when they get to that point where they've narrowed it down to one or two models, they start seeing that car driving everywhere on the road, and they never noticed it before the car was a goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's their subconscious and intuition essentially putting a spotlight on these possibilities to make that goal true, to make that goal achieved. And the same thing happens in any goal that you decide to have.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because I've noticed that after the fact. When we bought our Subaru Forester back in, gosh, what was it? 2000 something or other, I forget how long ago, it's been a while, and we've changed cars since then. But it was only after we bought the car that, you know, we started seeing this particular car and colors, the same color scheme in different places. And then when we moved to Santa Barbara and we traded the Subaru in for a Volvo, now that was the other thing too. Now you have interesting description. A lot of people will do that. We actually did not do that. In both instances, it was like, all right, we're just going to go down to the dealership and see what kind of a deal that they can offer us in trade for the vehicle that we currently have and see what we like. And, of course, we've always bought foreign cars, Volkswagens and, again, Subaru and a Volvo. It was like when we bought the Volvo here in Santa Barbara, when we traded in Subaru, we weren't looking specifically for. We were just saying, you know what? It'd be kind of interesting if we upgraded to, you know, whatever. And so we really left it wide open. We left it open to the universe in that respect. We didn't pinpoint, this is what we want. Now, I know that a lot of people, they do, because they have specific needs and or wants, as did we. But for us, it was more, you know, here's what we'd like to do with the vehicle, okay? And at least for the time being, it's meeting our needs. And we're getting from point A to point B. And quite honestly, that's really the bottom line of a piece of transportation is it's to get you from point A to point B. And of course, if it does it in luxury or in whatever capacity you're wanting it to, so much the better. I would love, you know, not that I would like to work in Los Angeles. I wouldn't have a problem taking a train. I love taking the train. I don't want to own one, but I enjoy that. I'm going to go back to the subject of intuition and especially this quote. And it's funny because this particular quote that I'm reading here from your book is attributed to an individual who, did terrible in math, but it's considered to be one of the most intelligent, if you will, scientific minds of our time. And no, it is not Stephen Hawking, who's pretty doggone intelligent, but this gentleman has passed since. But what I find interesting is the fact that he makes this statement. He says, the intuitive mind is a sacred gift, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift. And this is coming from a scientist. This is coming from a guy who, you know, he's processing information and he's running all these equations and he came up with the theory of relativity, among other things, E equals MC squared. You know, I'm lucky if I remember some of the math equations in algebra from high school. pardon me. But here's a man who gives very strong credence to that intangible element of human existence.
Right. And he's not the only one. I mean, there are thousands of people who have great things to say about intuition. But what I think he meant by that quote is that we all do have an intuitive mind and a rational mind. And our society has created this honoring of this servant, this rational mind that'll do whatever it is that we tell it to do and however we program it to operate. But we honor this rational mind, and we forgot the gift of the intuition. And let me just explain why. When you have a question about anything, most people in our society, especially since we're all walking around with computers in our pocket, what do? We go to Google.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first step for research. We talk to our friends. We analyze. We measure. We evaluate. We consider every possibility of taking a step towards our goal and the outcome possibilities and everything that we can contemplate rationally before we ever make a decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you were contemplating really spending and honoring your rational mind would have talked you out of making that turn while you were riding your bike to work.
Mm.
But you ended up honoring your intuitive mind and decided to go ahead and follow the lead. Now, you don't know what you were prevented from experiencing, but it could have been awful. It could have been a number of different things. You'll never know, but you did arrive to work safely. I'll give you a great example of how this works. I travel about 150 to 200,000 miles a year when I'm, you know, full-blown business growth mode. My last business was software and equipment for large hospital systems. And so I happened to be in Cleveland, and I have a routine. I get off the plane, I get my bags, I get my rent car, I go to the hotel. I drop off my bags, and then I drive usually to the closest grocery store to get water and protein shakes and things that I need for my stay. Well, I'm sitting in the car, ready to go to the grocery store, and I get this very strong thought, it kind of feels throughout my whole body, to drive to a grocery store that's 15 minutes away instead of the closest one that's 5 minutes away. So here comes my rational mind. May. It's 9 o'clock at night in Cleveland. It's too late to be driving across town. And, by the way, your appointment's at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. That's really 5 o'clock in the morning Seattle time. You're going to be way too tired. So just go to the closest grocery store and get a good night's sleep. That's what the rational mind will do. So you have to figuratively stomp your foot and say stop so that you can enable the intuitive mind to have a say as well. So I did that, and the intuitive mind pipes up and says, May, you know, it's 9 o'clock here in Cleveland, but it's really only 6 o'clock in Seattle. You can't go to sleep this early anyway. And who knows? Maybe everything you want will be on sale at that other grocery store. Just make the drive. It's 20 minutes out of your way. Just make the drive. So I did. I parked the car, and as I'm walking into the grocery store, this guy is walking out at exactly the same time. And he was a decision maker for a potentially very large customer who I had met 6 months before at a trade show. He was not returning any of my phone calls or my emails for an appointment. So we strike up this conversation. I let him know about our growth trajectory and some of the other customers that have bought from us. And he says, look, while you're here in Cleveland, why don't you come make a presentation to our group? Well, that led to another presentation and another one, and then a contract worth over $500,000 for our company. My goal that I had been grateful for and writing about and reading and imagining every single morning up until that point was that we receive a minimum or more than $400,000 in revenue by a particular period. And this was a $500,000 contract. So no one would think that to achieve a goal of $400,000 in revenue, that you would drive across town in Cleveland at 9 o'clock at night and go to a grocery store. I mean, that's just not the way it works. But that's the way the intuitive mind works. There's a connection that is always looking for possibilities to direct you towards your completed goal if you take advantage of it and follow the leads that you get.
This is very interesting because I know that when we talk about the various aspects, as you defined at the front end of this program, wealth, that a mental image comes into most people's minds that we're talking about cash. You know, we're talking about money. We're talking about more zeros in the bank account. I have really worked very, very hard over the years to be the observer of the myriad, the absolutely unending aspects of abundance and prosperity in all its forms. And I remember there was an incident not long ago where we had an experience where I think the dollar amount was like $50. And we had to spend it on whatever it was. And of course my mind was thinking, geez, you know, it's not a big deal, but still, you know, it's like $50. It's doesn't come cheap, that kind of thing. And the next thing I know, in comes not $50, but a reduction in one of our bills by $50. So I didn't get paid or reimbursed in that sense, but now on this other bill, I don't have to pay out the 50. And that was, in my observation, that was abundance. And I've even had people who have given us things, and it's the same thing. And I think that one of the aspects that maybe we'll talk about here also is changing our perception of what prosperity and abundance and wealth is, because in the West, here in the United States, it means one thing and one thing only.
Well, I think that it's whatever the individual describes wealth to be for them. You know, one person's idea of wealth might be to have money left over at the end of the month after they pay all their bills, so that they can, you know, have some entertainment and savings and things like that. And another person, their definition of wealth might be being completely debt-free. It's really whatever the individual's definition of wealth in terms of finances is. But wealth is also health, relationships, recreation, maybe even a spiritual component. You know, for somebody to be wealthy and full and whole and complete, you know, spiritually and emotionally, that also could be their definition of a component of wealth. But it can come in any way that you want. Any way that the universe decides to deliver it to you. What's important is to notice. Had that not been part of what you were looking for in terms of noticing, you might have missed the fact that your bill had been reduced by $50. You noticed that, and you were able to celebrate it that it came in. There's lots of times when bills change and people don't notice it, because what they're trying to do is create the path to achieve their goal. And in my book, I describe how you can partner with this source of intuition so that your job is just to describe what it is that you want with gratitude as though you've already achieved it. Your source of intuition's job is to create the path for you to get there, and then to give you one step to take at a time along that path to achieve your goals. You either take the step that you're led to take, not knowing what the outcome is for that step. You either take the step, or if you're unsure, it's scary to you, your rational mind is barking too loud and you're not able to actually let your intuitive mind have a say, then just stop and ask for another lead. Source of intuition, I need another lead. I need another sign that tells me whether or not this is the step that I'm supposed to take. And what it will tell you is that if you stop and ask for another lead, you'll get one. You'll get as many leads as are necessary to guide you and direct you along the path that it creates for you to achieve your goal. One of my goals back in the 90s was, and still is today, which is to have a healthy body. And so it's 1994, and I get this sort of picture of my sister's face in my mind's eye, and I'm like, okay, well, that means I need to contact my sister, and I happen to be close to her office. So I popped in, I showed up, and she was really happy to see me because she had a computer problem, and she knew I could fix it for free. So I'm sitting at her computer fixing her problem, and she notices this tiny, just really, really tiny little dark spot on the outside of my right leg through my nylons. And she says, what is that? And I was born and raised in Hawaii, so I said, you know, it's a freckle. And she said she didn't feel that it was a freckle and asked me to see her dermatologist. Well, my rational mind was just about to dismiss her fear. I mean, I'd had that freckle all my life. It can't possibly be anything. It hasn't grown. It's just a freckle. But I stopped and waited, and all of a sudden my gut kind of started to hurt. And I knew that that was intuition saying to just do as she said. So I made the appointment. Even the doctor told me it was nothing to worry about. And just as I was about to leave the exam room, because he had said it's nothing to worry about, just go ahead and go home, my gut hurt again. So I looked at him and I said, I'm so sorry, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but you need to cut that off. So he barely got one stitch in, Richard. It was so, so small. I came back a week later to a diagnosis of malignant melanoma, Clark's level 3.
Hmm.
So this is how it works, but I could have easily listened to my rational mind all the way along.
Well,
but instead, I listened to the intuitive mind, the intuitive messaging, and it turned out that I achieved my goal of good health.
Well, I can relate to that as well, because normally at the age of 50, most people should have a colonoscopy. And
Those are really difficult.
I understand, but I put it off for 5 years.
Oh, my.
Now, I had the minor version of it. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it's a minor version where, you know, and of course, I waited 5 years. Now, everything was fine with the minor thing, but they said, you know, you really need to have the full-blown thing. Okay, fine, no big deal. But I waited 5 years. Now, they found a tiny little, I think it was 2 millimeter, if that, maybe even smaller than that, little thing, which they, in the process, they removed. And then they tested it. It was benign. No big deal. But what I thought about was, gee, you know, if I had gone in and done the full-blown when I was 50, the next one isn't until I'm 60, 10 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows that what they just found at the age of 55, what that would have looked like 5 years hence?
Yeah.
And so doing it in the way that I did it, you know, it was like, okay, you know, I can definitely live with that.
Did you feel any intuitive messaging, any gut instincts, anything that said, yeah, it's fine to wait, or did you just rationalize?
No, I just felt it was, pardon me. I just felt it was fine to wait. It was like, because I'd had the minor thing and they found nothing, everything was good. Everything looked great, you know. And, of course, I've had my regular physicals each of the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, again, everything, all the blood work comes back just fine and so forth and so on. And it was like, okay, 55, and that I keep getting this, what I refer to as a harassing message on my medical app saying, you need to do this, you need to do this, along with the flu shot thing, and which I never take those. There's an intuitive thing about that. I would rather my immune system go to work like it's designed to do. And I then, while I'm going through the while I'm suffering through, if I do get it, it's okay. If it doesn't kill me, it will make me stronger, and hoping it doesn't kill me. but I did not have that. It was just like that knowing that, hey, it's okay.
Yeah.
All is well. And so when I went in at 55 and they checked it out and everything was good and they found that little thing and they tested it and they told me, hey, no big deal. You're good to go for 10 years. So now I don't have to go until I'm 65. Will I wait that long? I don't know. Maybe at 60. Hey, let's do the little one, you know, and then in five years we'll do the big one. You know, I may take that tack that every 5 years I'm going to do one or the other just because.
Well, you don't even have to decide that right
exactly.
this minute. What you could do is it's part of your, daily goal attainment process. You're just proclaiming that you're grateful for having a physically fit, trim, toned, energetic, healthy body where every cell is operating exactly the way that it was designed in a flawless manner.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there's anything for you to be concerned about, you'll be told.
Absolutely.
Your intuition will tell you, now's the time to go get this scheduled.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Mae McCarthy's my guest. We're talking about the path to wealth. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking about the 7 spiritual steps for financial abundance. The path to wealth. Mae McCarthy is my guest. And you've put this, I said at the beginning of the program, I like this because it's a small little book. I carry another book that I had rebound in my pack with me just about everywhere that I go, sort of an inspirational thing. And this is along the same kind of along the same lines. It's a clear path to a clear plan to wealth and abundance in just 30 minutes a day. And for some, even including myself, because I have a hard time, Mae, setting aside time to actually do any kind of meditating, even if it's just 5 minutes. So I try to take on. I think it was Teresa of Avila who says that God is amongst the pots and the pans. So I try to just remember that what I'm doing, when I'm doing it, wherever I'm doing it, I'm going to do what I can to be in that meditative state, to listen. Because my perspective in regards to meditation is the element of, okay, what am I supposed to achieve? I finally came to, at least for myself, the understanding for me that however I can get quiet enough to hear that voice is meditation. Even if I'm driving in the car, even if I'm taking my walk up and down State Street, or I've got the grass trimmer and I'm trimming down the weeds, for fire prevention and that kind of stuff, or whatever, or playing with the dog in the backyard, and I get those kinds of impressions, then I'm in the meditative state.
Well, I think that's great. I really admire people that can meditate on a regular basis. I think it's fantastic. I can meditate every now and then, but my mind, you probably heard that term, monkey mind, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
My mind starts to dance around thinking about all the different areas of responsibility that I have, whether it's family or work or, caring for, properties or whatever it is that's volunteering that I have commitments for or angel investing. Companies that I'm reviewing. So my mind will often dance around, and I seem to have to block off a larger than normal amount of time to set aside for meditation. So I don't do it very consistently, but I do this practice, what I call the morning meeting with my CSO, or my what I call my source of intuition. I lovingly refer to it as the chief spiritual officer, the CSO. But I have that morning meeting every day because I'm very, very serious about achieving the goals that I want. And what I ask people that attend workshops or read my book to do is to set aside time every single day to have a meeting with themselves. I mean, think about it this way. If you think of the most successful person you can think of, some people... because Bill Gates tops the Forbes chart again, they'll use him as an example. And he, by the way, says that often you have to rely on intuition. He uses it as a success tool as well. But let's say that Bill Gates came up to you and said, Richard, I want to help you achieve your goals. So here's what we'll do. Every morning we're going to meet for a half an hour. You're going to tell me what your goals are. Throughout the day, I'm going to give you some ideas that you can take steps along a path that I think is, a really clear path for you to achieve your goals. You can either take the steps or ask me for clarification or another, some sort of feedback on why I think you should take that step. Eventually, if you take all the steps, you'll reach your goals, and You know, we can celebrate. Would you agree to meet with Bill Gates every single morning to do that? Or whoever it is that is the most successful person you can think of. And most people said, yeah, gosh, you know, if I could have that kind of advice, I'd absolutely do it. And my response is, you have a more intelligent advisor available to you. Something that will show up and guide you and direct you along a path that it creates that you can't even rationally imagine. This goes beyond your rational mind. This is, you know, who would have thought that I would just think of my sister, help her with a problem, and then have what came next save my life? I mean, no one would think that that would happen. If I would have just gone in for my normal physical and the doctor said that spot was nothing, I might not have had it removed. So the point being is that if you set aside time every day and keep the goals at the forefront of your thoughts, not only is the source of intuition going to help give you guidance and directive, but your own subconscious is going to go on high alert because it wants you to operate in integrity. If you're proclaiming a truth that is not true yet, if you're describing that you have a completed goal that you haven't completed yet, your subconscious is freaking out and wants to show you and illuminate possibilities that your source of intuition is showing up with so that you see it in a more obvious way and feel more comfortable about taking the step along a path that it creates. It's really uncanny. So if I do that every single day, it can feel a little monotonous, but I can tell you that very, very famous people say that repetition does reap rewards. I mean, Earl Nightingale, Muhammad Ali. What happens is when you're doing a repetitive process like this morning meeting and you're describing your goals every day as though you've already achieved them, reading them out loud and imagine seeing yourself in the completed goal, you're creating, according to brain research, you're creating a new neural pathway of belief. And once you believe that something's possible, achieving it is very, very easy. You actually become magnetic to achieving it. So this morning practice is not only enabling subconscious and intuition to show you signs to take steps to achieve your goals, but it's helping you to create a new belief so that you can keep what you achieve. I mean, think about all the lottery winners that lose everything after a particular period of time. And in fact, sometimes become in worse financial shape than they were before they received the lottery winnings. It's because they didn't change their mental belief system to keep what they got. So this practice does two things. Helps you enable intuition in your subconscious to point you along a path to achieve your goal, and also changes your beliefs so that you can keep what you achieve.
Yeah, I've heard that statistic too, and it is all, you know, changing the perspectives. It's like we were talking about earlier, and I know that there have been periods of time in my life, not that long ago, when fear came in and kind of took over, and, you know, be freaking out over, you know, these various events going on in my finances. And I've gotten to the point now where, and in spite of the fact that I'm always told, you know, this is a serious business, you've got to get a handle on this, and you do this and do that and do the other. And then there are supposedly these advisors out there to help you. And as I was reading, for example, where you talk about the CSO, you talk about one of the first steps in this journey is to welcome a new member to your financial advisory team. I stopped there and I'm going, oh, come on, I'm going to have to pay this person money that I worked hard for. And they're going to tell me that this is what I need to do and this is what I need to do and so forth. And then they're going to take a percentage. And there's a part of me that's going, wait a minute, I understand that, you know, we should compensate people for their services, their products or services. Okay, I understand that. But when it comes to money, for some reason, there's this big stranglehold. But as you continue on, you talk about the CSO, and that's our intuition. And there is a price to pay but it's not in cash. it's a different price, and it's something that we can afford in more ways than one. And actually, I would think you would agree, May, that it would cost us a lot more not to listen and follow, right?
Oh, sure. Well, you brought up a couple of different points. The first one was fear. And, you know, faith and fear are exactly the same thing. You know, faith is having confidence in achieving what you do want and focusing on what you do want. Fear is having confidence in achieving what you don't want. I mean, when you are filled with fear, you're thinking about what you don't want. You don't want to continue to be in a state of lack. You don't want to continue in relationships that are filled with disharmony. You don't want to continue to feel unappreciated at work. You know, and I mean, there are countless stories in my book and in so many other books that talk about how fear makes us magnetic to experience and realize what we don't want in our life. You hear people talking about, I don't want this, I don't want that, or, oh, everyone at my office has been sick with the flu, I don't want to get the flu, and what happens? They get it. Because they're describing and thinking about and feeling that awful, you know, horrible pain in their body that is what they don't want, is directly related to what they don't want. And you have to actually eliminate that fear, and the way that you do that is with your spoken word. If you're describing something out loud and thinking something negative, the spoken word will always win out to get your attention. So if you say, you know, I don't want to get sick, and you're thinking, I don't want to get sick, and you're saying out loud, I'm so grateful that I'm healthy, your spoken word is what's going to get control of your subconscious and yourself. And you may need to repeat those affirmative statements, you know, thousands of times in order to drown out that fearful thought. But you can do it. There's a lot of power in words, and people don't realize just how powerful they are. I had a friend of mine that used to say the phrase that he learned from his grandfather and his father, which is when he's surprised about something, he'd say, I'll be damned. I'll be damned. And he started looking at his life, and his life definitely had an element of damning in it.
Mm-hmm.
So he changed his words, and things in his life changed. So fear is one thing that's really, really important. You also talked about, you know, the price of having this, you know, being in partnership with the source of your intuition, or as some people call it, the all-knowing power of the universe, or, you know, others use spiritual names for it. But the CSO is what I landed on, and when you are in partnership with the CSO, you are following clear roles and responsibilities. You wouldn't go into somebody else's office within your company that's in a different department and start doing their job for them. So you need to stop trying to do your source of intuition's job. Your source of intuition's job is to create the path for you to achieve your goal and give you one step to take at a time to get there. Your job is to figure out what it is that you want and then follow these intuitive leads when you get them, or if you're unsure, ask for another lead. And it's a very, very clear partnership. Your commitment to meet every single morning with your CSO sets the tone for your day, so that no matter what happens during the day, whether what you might have perceived as a crisis in the past, you know, things happen that are unexpected, but you won't be so riled up, because it's not part of your job to be riled up.
Mm.
If there's something that's happened, your job is to figure out what you want the outcome to be and leave it up to the CSO to figure out the steps to get there. You don't have to be concerned that these unexpected crises are going to affect you adversely. You'll be able to move through them much, much easier with less emotional drama if you stay really closely in partnership with your CSO.
Do you find that there are other cultures that are more in tune with that CSO, if you will, in this context?
I think there are other cultures that train people to recognize that there's an intelligence in the universe that will guide them and direct them throughout their lives. I think as we get more into the Western culture, we end up relying more and honoring the rational mind much more. I mean, we're data junkies. When I go to speak, I advise a lot of university and MBA students that are starting new companies, and I mentor them and help them to come up with plans to grow their companies. And it's amazing to me. It's like the Pavlov dog series, where their device will have a chime, and they're like a dog whose tail goes up, and they, you know, grab their device immediately and look at it. I mean, we're data junkies. And that I think is more prevalent in the Western cultures than it is in, you know, Eastern and tribal cultures. They have more of a reliance on, a spiritual component. And when I say spiritual, I just mean something that's unseen. You can't see the source of your intuition.
No.
There's evidence that it's there,
right,
but you can't see it. So I just roll that up into a term called spiritual. And so we don't teach our kids, and in our Western culture, we don't teach this reliance on a spiritual advisor as much as some of the cultures with less technology.
Well, and even in organized religion, we don't teach that. I mean, we're taught to go to someone else, some other human being, for guidance and so forth.
I'm asked to speak at a lot of what are termed new thought centers.
Mm-hmm.
That would be Centers for Spiritual Living and Unity Churches and different organizations that teach new thought principles, which is a reliance on this unseen intelligence and this recognition that intelligence is within each and every one of us, and we can tap into it. So it's kind of refreshing when I'm with crowds like that. But I also am asked by groups of CEOs and Fortune 500 companies to talk about it, and that's when I pull in people like Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, and Oprah, who all say that relying on intuition is, in fact, a success tool. So in the spiritual New Thought community, they might have terms like God and spirit and divine intelligence. And in the corporate world, we just call it source of intuition because everybody's got it.
Yeah, but not everybody's listening. And even those who might be listening are not necessarily following the promptings. And I say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek, that if you're going to listen but not follow the promptings, then why bother? Why bother listening? You know, because that information is there for you. It's not like a news channel that's on all the time and you can turn it on, turn it off when you want. It's there to help you. It's for you specifically, individually, personally. And I find myself more and more each day tapping into and listening to, and it's not that.
Yeah,
and the more you do it, the easier it gets. The more you do it, the more you follow through, the easier it gets. It really is.
That's absolutely true. And I have to tell you that I agree a lot with what Steve Jobs' assessment of intuition was. He said that you actually have to have courage.
Yes.
You have to have courage to follow your heart and intuition. And I'll give you a great example. In one of my previous companies, we had we got our very first customer who took a chance on us. And so we had to install software in this giant revolving shelving unit called a carousel. And we had to do this by a certain date for this pharmacy opening. And we got word from our vendor that there was going to be a delay, and we were potentially going to miss the date. And if we missed the date, they were going to cancel our contract, not pay us, and require us to help another vendor get installed. So, I mean, this was our very first customer, so we really had to perform. And all of us were terrified about this delay. And then we stopped. And I said, guys, what do we want? What we want is a successful implementation. We want a good reference from this customer. We want to help them be operational by the date that they want to be operational. What can we do? What can we do? So we started really considering what we wanted the outcome to be. And all of a sudden, one of our senior developers said, you know, why don't we get some temporary static shelving and modify our software so that it treats this static shelving as though it was a revolving shelving unit? That will at least have them operational by the date that they want. And in fact, this could help solve the problem that we were a solution that was not affordable for smaller hospitals. Now we could be affordable for smaller hospitals if we could make this work.
Hmm.
So we had some creativity that showed up as soon as we started focusing on what we wanted the outcome to be. And in fact, the hospital loved it. And out of their, 11 hospitals, 4 were going to be too small for us to serve. And with this solution, we were able to serve all 11.
It kind of reinforces that old adage about necessity being the mother of invention in this instance. But in a general sense, I find myself when I'm faced with a project, whether it be at the station or even at home, and I really don't want to go down to the hardware store or wherever it is that I need to go and buy this new thing or all of these different things. And where we happen to live in particular, there's all kinds of parts and materials and so forth. And it's repurposing these, if you will, or recycling. And I find myself going in that direction more and more. And one of the greatest aspects, I think, that my wife has taught me, and it's really sunk in over the years, is to take care of the things that you have. And that makes a lot of sense on many different levels. You want to treat this thing and beat it up and on and on. You know, it's kind of like we were talking before about, buying a new car or even a used car, what have you. And even my father used to tell me that, you're either going to pay your monthly payments now and then pay even more once you've paid off the loan if you don't take care of it, or your monthly payments are going to go away and everything is going to, it's going to be much better in that respect. And so I've done that. I've worked very hard to take care of not just the things, but even myself for that matter. I mean, at the age of 15, I knew that what I put into my body was going to have a major impact on my physical health when I was in my 50s and 60s and 70s.
That's amazing. I think a lot of, young teenagers, we end up, when we were that age, thinking we were immortal.
Yeah.
And took, risks that were beyond.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly beyond risks that I would take now, in terms of sports and different things. And because we were so active, we didn't care what we ate.
Yeah.
It never changed our appearance. It's only after we, add in a little bit more of a sedentary lifestyle because of, college and maybe being in an area where it's different weather and we can't get outside as much as we used to. And all of a sudden we start to recognize, wait a minute, maybe this does have an effect on my well-being and I should be more mindful.
Well, it's funny because when I first got into this industry back in 1979 and I started to see and meet more people who would sit behind the console and doing their programs or their radio shows or their music. And some of these guys, they had a pretty wide girth.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't want to wind up like them. And I was very grateful for the fact that I was bicycling everywhere at the time.
Yeah.
And then, of course, go ahead.
your assessment also of taking good care of the things that you have.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way in terms of clothing.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything starts to feel, you know, just even minutely snug, I know that's an indication to be more mindful about what I put into my body so that I can stay in the same size clothing and enjoy the clothing that I already own.
Yeah.
I don't particularly like to shop. In fact, that's probably the very last thing on my list that I would want to do. and that taking good care of the things that you have includes, you know, your clothing. And because of that, that helps me with my physical fit body and staying the same size that I am. That's how I regulate it. But isn't that interesting that many friends and family that I know too, and business colleagues, you know, you'll see them 6 months after the last time you saw them and think, wait a minute, they've, you know, added a whole lot of weight, or, oh my gosh, they've lost a whole lot of weight. And you're always curious as to find out what happened in their life that allowed that to happen.
Yeah. And for me, for example, I remember, I mean, I still remember when I used to wear jeans waist 32. That was a while ago. And now I've fortunately, it seems like at least I've stabilized where now I'm at 38. I don't want to go any higher than that if I don't, you know. By the same token, I have to remember, too, that our bodies do change, no matter how well we take care of ourselves as we age. Our bodies are, the metabolism is still changing. And you know, for the last year and a half, I would go, my wife works at a medical clinic here in Santa Barbara and in the cardiology department. And every day, we'd drop her off, we'd go upstairs, I would weigh myself, and then she'd take my blood pressure, and then I would record it on my phone. I have these notepads that on my phone that I've been keeping track for the last year and a half. But in the month of April and May, I've kind of decided that I'm going to stop because there's a certain obsession with that. It's like, okay, it's wonderful to keep track of that, but there comes a point at which, you know, there's only so much you can do. You're doing everything that you can do now. You're eating as well as you can eat. You're exercising as well as you can exercise, and so on and so forth. And yet the numbers aren't reflecting what I think they should reflect. And so it's starting to wear on me mentally. And so I'm figuring, well, the solution is not to go do anything to try to make the numbers what I want. It's to let go of it. And speaking of which, let me ask you about this. And I heard this not too long ago. And this goes to the you know, you talked about fear and faith being basically the same thing. But let me ask you about this aspect of the fear being sort of the dark side, the underworld of our lives, and it's part of who and what we are. And I heard not long ago that we are always trying to win. Whenever we're faced with the dark side, we're going to do everything we can to win. But that the reality is we will never win. And that what we need to do is surrender, allow ourselves to, quote unquote, lose. And then we're able to come back the next time with more knowledge, more awareness, more understanding when we face our dark side again. That helps us to get through it a little bit better. It's not quite as traumatic. It's not quite as severe in that respect. And I will use the example of the passing of one of our dearly beloved cats. And we had a stroke. And for 3 weeks, we took him to the vet. We cared for him. We loved him. We did everything we could. But by the end of the 3 weeks, he passed away. And that, to me, is facing the dark side, the underworld, if you will. You can't win. The animal, as much as we love them, or human being, they're going to die. You've done all you can do, and now you have to surrender and just let it happen. And then you go through it, and you go through the emotions and so forth, You come out the other side, but now you're wiser, you're more aware, you're more understanding, you're more empathetic, and so forth. What about that aspect of being on this path of path to wealth, and when stuff happens to us?
Well, you start out by mentioning fear, and then with the example of your cat, and I'm so sorry, by the way, but with the example of the cat, that's stuff that happens, all right? And we get to choose how to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
We get to choose what to focus our attention on in order to live the life that we want. And as painful as it is to lose a member of your family, of which I know our cat is a member of our family,
mm-hmm.
Or even, you know, a human family member, I mean, it's incredibly painful. And we can be unreasonable and think that, you know, perhaps the efforts that we did weren't enough. Perhaps the medical community didn't do enough. We could focus on that, or we could choose to focus on how wonderful it was to have the time that we had together.
Mm-hmm.
And what a blessing, and what a truly bundle of joy that being was in our life.
Yes.
And we can choose to focus on what's good. When stuff happens, we can analyze it, certainly, and see what was our part in it. I have a friend of mine who recognized after he looked back at losing a job that he had some responsibility in losing it. His fear about this change of control that happened when the company he worked for sold to another company, his fear, which he then ended up making stories up about and future tripping, which is trying to project into the future all the terrible things that are going to happen as a result of this,
mm-hmm.
he had a hand in manifesting his own being fired. But he could change how that affected him if he looked at it a different way. If he started to forgive the person that fired him, if he started to take responsibility in terms of what his part was in terms of getting fired, and if he started to describe what he wanted as though he already achieved it in a new position, then the way he looked at that terrible, painful situation in the past could, in fact, be looked at as necessary in order for him to have the new job that he wanted. And he did. He, in a very miraculous way, got a new job with higher pay, less travel, he could stay at home with his family, and he felt more appreciated by the company that he worked for than he had ever been appreciated or felt appreciated for any company they worked for in the past. And he was able to look at that terrible situation, that painful situation of being fired, in a whole new way.
Mm.
Like, he had to have gotten fired, and he was grateful he got fired so that he could have this new position that was even better.
Wow.
And I had the same thing. I had a company that I had grown to about 50, it was about valued at about $50 million. We had about 145 employees. And three co-founders got into a disagreement. And essentially, one co-founder pushed out myself and another co-founder. Fortunately, we got bought out for way more than we expected. But we got pushed out, and it was very painful, really, really painful. But I decided to look at it differently, knowing that my next company would be even more successful, and that I could look back in the rearview mirror of life and see that that painful situation was necessary for us to have this even greater success in the future. So I chose with my words, thoughts, and emotions to see that, you know, someday I was going to look in the rearview mirror of life and see that that was a positive experience. And I have. I mean, we went on to start another company that was, you know, by leaps and bounds more successful than the previous one. It was more joyful. It blessed more customers. Our co-workers loved working with us. Everything was amazing. And it only occurred because this other painful situation happened first. So we get to choose how we look at stuff. Life is going to happen.
Yeah.
Life is going to happen. We're going to lose loved ones. We're going to have accidents. We're going to have things that happen that really don't have explanations rationally.
And even though it's in retrospect, as you begin to do that processing, as you described with your friend and yourself,
yeah.
You can then sort of project that forward and saying, okay, if that's how it unfolded and my perception of it is what it is now,
mm-hmm.
then you can then build what you're talking about. You can you build that future in the same, mm-hmm. in the same way, even though in reality it's not there, but in your mind it can be.
Yeah, and you can use, I talk about this in my book, that you can use your words, thoughts, and emotions to create a whole new reality. Reality,
yeah.
You know, the way, if 10 people watch a car accident happen,
mm-hmm.
you get 10 different versions of what happened.
That's right.
Our reality is based on what we choose and what our experiences are. But we can even decide to describe our experience in a different way. We can describe it as though it was necessary and positive. We can describe it as though it gave us benefit in the future.
Hmm.
We can describe it any way that we want. And we take that experience that we've described, that we have experienced, that's subjective to us, and we take it forward and use it as part of our lens and our view of the world.
I'm real excited about all of this, and I think that what you're offering us here through the book, The Path to Wealth, I think can make a big difference. Not just in our, and I know it's not intended specifically or directly, exclusively to help our finances, but it certainly won't hurt, I guarantee you. And if you go to maymccarthy.com, you can get more information about May and about the book and about the other information and other things she has to offer along the way of the 7 spiritual steps for financial abundance. That's the path to wealth. And before I let you go, 2 things, May. One is that if you ever find yourself here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue our conversation. And number 2 is that I have 3 final questions that I'd like to have you answer, if you would. You've probably addressed them in some way, shape, or form throughout the program, but I ask these directly to you at this time. And the first being, who is May McCarthy?
Oh, boy. I'm ease and joy. But my purpose is to bless others and be blessed. To elevate prosperity and freedom for all.
Hmm. Well, you've answered questions 1 and 3 at the same time there. So I'll ask question number 2. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I would like to help people live the lives that they decide is their good, and good in all areas of their life. I would like them to feel whole and complete, lacking nothing in every area of their life. And if I can be some small part of that, even, you know, just sending my good thoughts towards them, that's what I would like to achieve.
Wonderful. Well, May, I want to thank you again for joining us on the program, and much success as well. You've already had great success up to this point, and I'm sure that it will continue on into the future. And we hope to talk to you again soon about some other things that you're doing, that you have in the works.
Well, thanks so much. I look forward to seeing you sometime in Santa Barbara.
Wonderful. May McCarthy has been my guest, the author of The Path to Wealth, and the website is maymccarthy.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to law.